I am Phil, Pastor Phil, I guess some say, and usually I lead worship if you're new here, so get to speak a little this morning. And I am really excited because when Chris said we're going to go through the Psalms, at first, a little of excitement because that kind of as a worship pastor, you look excited, that's my territory kind of thing. Then I remember taking my team once through the Psalms, and if you just live in the Psalms, those first few chapters, you just feel like everybody's attacking you. There's a lot of chapters about David just being chased down. And then what we wanted was strength from the Psalms. So I'm really delighted with how the series has been going. And I hope that you guys have been enjoying it as well. And in finding strength, especially in this time where you turn on the news and our world's a scary world right now. It's interesting when you think about it, this is not the same world I remember being in as a kid. And speaking of being a kid, I want you to think of something right now. I want you to think of a food, because today we're going to talk about taste and see from Psalm 34. I want you to think of a food that you like now that you didn't like so much as a kid. Don't tell anyone yet. I want you to think of it, though. Think of a food that you like now. I'm thinking parsnips I still don't like, so that doesn't qualify. Like asparagus could be mine. As a kid, I just thought it was something you mowed over. It looked like a weed, that really thick stuff. All right, you got it? I want you to share that with the person on your left. Tell them what that food is. Now, if you all look to the left at once, it's not going to work out. So let's have a system here. We'll share just partially through. All right, for how many of you was it a vegetable? All right. How many of you was it a meat? Was it a meat? Was it like oysters? I don't know if I still like them. I don't eat them enough. I can't tell. Was it a bread? Anybody pick bread? Was it all vegetables? Did anybody not have a vegetable? All right, give me one that was non-vegetable. Kumquat? I don't even know what that is. That's my dad. Thanks for not feeding it to me. Obviously, he didn't like it, so I didn't get it. It's a fruit? Is that sound right? Is that a fruit? All right. I love trying new things. It's interesting as my wife and I go out, I usually order the same thing now because I get in trouble ordering new things. And I have this thing, so now I put it on my phone. So when we go to Panino's, I order the same thing each time. Because I have this problem of getting overwhelmed with new opportunities. And I take these risks, and all of a sudden I get it, and I go, oh, yuck, not so good. But I'm willing to take the risk. And how many of you guys are risk takers when you go to restaurants? Always try to order something new? Yeah, I like that. How many of you would rather do the safe thing? Get the same one? There's a huge continuum. And as we look at this and we go taste and see, David's actually going to give us an opportunity to taste and see this experience with God. A few times, though, as we taste and see, we run into some maybe not so pleasant circumstances. Now, when I'm at Panino's and say I order something with a little bit too many jalapenos, which is really hard to do because you can never have too many jalapenos this age, this side of 40. there's not a lot of risk when that doesn't work out. But maybe you're here today, and I've gone through some experiences, as you know, I've shared publicly before, where some things, you try something, and it doesn't quite work out. Maybe it's a relationship. I was going to say maybe it's an investment thing, but I think that's probably across the board, investments right now. Maybe there was a new business that you were hoping to start, or maybe it's even a family. And right now you're going, didn't quite work out the way I expected it to work out. It's a universal problem. And it would be tragic if we shared a story from the Bible that was written thousands of years ago and we weren't able to relate that to who we are today in 2009. And so I want to start, in order to give you what Psalm 34 really means, because we need to go back and we need to look at some of the history behind it. And so the history of this actually starts with a man named David, who we're all very familiar with. He's the guy that was able to find five pebbles, is that how the song goes? Picked them up in a sling, round and round they went, and knocked down the giant of Goliath. And so he's the guy that wrote Psalm 34. And so we're going to start with him. It starts with, after he knocks down the giant, is that he becomes a national hero. King Saul recognizes him as a hero. But not just him, the whole nation starts to see David as this guy who is able to be almost as important as king. Because they give him a song. They actually give him a song that goes, Saul killed his thousands, and David killed his tens of thousands. Not probably Saul's favorite song, but it was one of those things that it must have been popular enough because it got written in the Bible in 1 Samuel. It probably wasn't one of those that just came by. It must have been one of those top 40 songs that came across. Well, Saul becomes jealous with David. And then as Saul becomes jealous, he doesn't kind of like having the guy that can kill 10,000 men around him. And so he orders his death. And so at Saul's order, David flees, going, this is probably not the safest place for me. And as David flees, his friend, David's close friend, his name is Jonathan. And Jonathan is Saul's son. King Saul's son, the one who wants to kill him. And so Jonathan, looking after his friend, says, Dad, can we rework this order to kill David? And Saul changes his mind. Well, David's now living in exile, but Saul finds himself in another war. Well, when you're in a big battle, who do you want? You want the guy who can kill 10,000 men, right? So David comes back. All of a sudden, David's now welcomed back in his country, and he's there, and he is found to be actually such a threatening presence on the battlefield that the Bible says that the enemy would just flee. Going, whoop, David's here? I'm backing up. This is the kind of man that he was. Well, Saul all of a sudden liked the fact that David helped defeat so many different enemies. And so, if you didn't know this, not only was David really good with a slingshot, but he was a musician. And so Saul said to David, hey, can you bring that harp on back? Bring that music. I want some of that in my place. And so David would come over and he would play for Saul to soothe him, the Bible says. Well, after one session that obviously didn't go too well because Saul got up and tried to pin him to the wall with a spear. I don't know about you, but as a musician, that's not a good sign. So usually it's at that point that you got to take off. So David must have been a fast-moving guy, obviously smaller than me. So he bolts out of there going, this is not the place for me. And David decides to get out of town. So now we're going to pick up with 1 Samuel 21 here before we get into this. So David has no home. He's not a wealthy king yet. He doesn't have a complete entourage like he will later. But he does have some people traveling with him. And so like any great hero in any movie, he's got to get resources. I think last time I spoke, I think I told you how I like to read the Bible. It almost plays like a movie in my head, especially the Old Testament. It's very cool. I don't know if there's a scene where, you know, the action hero has to get weapons and food. And this is the scene. So he goes to a place, N-O-B. I'm going to call it Nob or Nob. I don't know the proper one. I'm not invited there, so I'm just going to go with one of those. So he goes to Nob, and it's actually a place where the priests hang out. And at this town, he finds food, which is good. But the second thing he finds is a famous sword from Goliath. Now, David's not dumb. Because as he lost his home with King Saul, he recognized that the rest of the region, most of the region, not all of it, but most of the region, is controlled by the Philistines. Well, Goliath was this great legendary warrior of the Philistines. So David's got this plan that if he takes Goliath's sword, throws it along his side, he can walk anywhere. Who's going to touch him? He's got Goliath's sword along my side. It's kind of like a badge of honor. It's kind of like the medals. And so his plan was he's going to go to Nob, he's going to get food, he's going to get this sword, and then he's going to be untouchable. Well, from that, he decides to make a meeting with the king of Gath. The king of Gath is the king of the Philistines. And he shows up to this town, and he shows up wearing Goliath's sword, to which easily becomes recognized, and all of a sudden the paparazzi of King Gath's regime notices him, and this time they start singing a song. They start singing, Saul killed the thousands, David kings killed the tens of thousands. But the situation is different now. It's kind of as if we heard the Viking fight song sung by the Packers. It's a little different tone. It's like mockery all of a sudden. Because yes, David did kill Goliath. David did kill the warrior. But it's not quite an endearing song coming from the Philistines. So David decides that maybe this is not the safest place for me to be. Maybe I better change the great warrior motif. And actually what he does go for, I find it to be a little bit humorous, he goes for the madman. He goes to be insane. The Bible says in 1 Samuel, it says that he actually starts marking walls, clawing at walls and drooling. And so he went from this nice, proud warrior guy to a madman. And what happened with that is that he was brought before the king of Gath. And the king of Gath said, why are you bringing another crazy guy before me? Why are you bringing another madman? We can't do anything with this. And there was a thing at that time, of course, you didn't fight someone who was considered insane. And so David sneaks out of town, and now here we see Psalm 34. Psalm 34 is one of those things where David escapes the teeth, basically, of King Gath, because King Gath had every right to kill him. King Gath had every right to take him down, since he was the killer of the warrior. So here we are at Psalm 34. So as we read Psalm 34, I want you to picture David coming to you as a leader, as a friend, and someone who has stared death in the eyes. So let's read this together. Psalm 34. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his servants, for those who fear him lack nothing. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Whoever you are, whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking lies. Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and the ears are attentive to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. A righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. He protects all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Evil will slay the wicked. The foes of the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems his servants. No one will be condemned who takes refuge in him. David, as a musician, as a warrior, as a poet, takes a life experience, a decision that he had made that he thought, I'm going to be my own man. I'm going to pick Goliath's sword. I'm going to go my own way. Finds himself in not such a great situation where he should have stopped and paused and say, Lord, where do you want me to flee? Where do you want me to go to? Where do you want to use me? Instead, he goes in his own plan. And after this experience that didn't quite turn out as he hoped, wasn't welcomed by the king of Gath, he actually was ran out of town there too. He stops, and he records this in Psalm 34. And he starts out the beginning of it with praise to God. I just escaped with my life. But first, I'm going to praise God. In all things, above all things, I'm going to turn my face to him. And it actually says, as he turns his face to him, what does it say? It says, becomes radiant. And all shame is gone. Maybe you're here this morning and you've made a mistake like that. Hopefully nobody is chasing after you and trying to hunt you down. But maybe there's a mistake that you're not very proud of in your past that has been still holding you down. And David's example here is turn your face to God. Look up. Look to God. And allow your face to become radiant. And allow the shame to wash away. You see, as we focus on him, everything else fades away, just like that song. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, and the world grows strangely dim. It's just like that. As we turn our focus to him, those things can fade. But maybe you are still in that impossible situation, and you're here today maybe looking for answers. I encourage you as well. Turn to God first. Look to his glory. Allow him to put things in perspective. He says at the beginning of the psalm, he says, magnify the Lord with me. Exalt the Lord with me. And this word magnify is an interesting word from our context because I remember being in eighth grade science class and when the teacher brought out the microscopes, right? And we had to look at what, like cow's eyes and we had to look at frog skin. We had to look at all these different little ugly, yucky things like on a slide and they would slide in there. And these things would come to life. Well, God's not a micro thing. God's a big thing. So God says, magnify God. This, thinking of it like a magnifying glass is probably going to cut the word too short for you. But magnify in the sense of examine, almost like Jupiter. It's bigger than us. Examine God. Allow others to see God through you. Magnify, amplify God. And so David says in the midst of this, coming out of this struggle, will you amplify God with me? And that's one of the reasons why each week with worship, we start with songs of amplifying God. Not that God needs us to make him feel bigger. God doesn't need that. But it's for us. We need to be a part of the amplifying who God is. We need to put those words on our lips. We need to amplify it. In other words, because we are his hands. We are his lips at times. Not that he can't speak through other creation and natures and stuff, but he's given words to us to amplify. So David starts first with glorifying God. But then in verse 8, and if we can put this on the screen, verse 8, he picks up, he says, taste and see that the Lord is good. I like how he starts with this. Because here's a guy who knows that it's not going to be easy. Because he's going to tell us a little bit more what he wants us to taste and see. He wants us to taste and see a life with God. And David is one that has made plenty of mistakes in his past. And for those of you that know David's story, knows that David's going to have plenty of mistakes in his future. But he says right now, I know this might be hard to think of living a righteous, a holy life. But he says, just try it. It's like the person at Costco or at Cub Foods, you know, it's trying to push their bagel with spread on it or something like that. Say, taste this, just see. David here is going, just give it a shot. I know you might have reservations. Just give it a shot. So he says, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Fear the Lord, you his saints. For those who fear him lack nothing. The lion may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Now, I'm almost positive that he's not talking about like physical wealth, lack nothing here. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive. Because David didn't always live a wealthy life. And he's still saying this. And so I think David is finally seeing through an eternal perspective. Going, even though my life was on the line before the king, even though I've been run out actually by two kings, God has come to my aid. And I don't know what your situation is. If it's the feeling of going, I don't know how to be a husband, a wife. I don't know how to pay the bills and do the responsibilities that are before me. Or maybe right now, you're in one of those upswings and everything's feeling good. But as you know, there are the downswings in life as well. But he's saying, come to God, taste and see, because he'll provide all your needs. And it's an eternal perspective. I don't think David thought, you know, that I would have, he would have, you know, thousands of cattle chasing behind him. But he recognized that whatever my need is, at this moment, he believed that God would provide for him. So he says in verse 11, he says, come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days, keep your tongue from evil, your lips from speaking lies. Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. This is what he's asking us to taste. I'll read that one more time. And as I read this, allow this to be an invitation to you. It says, come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. I like how he says the fear of the Lord and not just to fear the Lord. In our understanding of the word fear, we think of distressed. In this use of this word, fear is actually coupled with love and hope. So it's a fear of a healthy respect. In other words, I fear the Lord. I want to obey. And that's why even we play the song, Trust and Obey. And so he says, let me teach you to obey the Lord. Let me teach you to respect the Lord. Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days, keep your tongue from evil, your lips from speaking lies. Turn from evil and do good, and seek peace and pursue it. I think that might have come to him, seek peace and pursue it, as he entered into town with Goliath's sword along his side. I don't know about you, but if you drive into any town with a tank, that doesn't say peace. And so I think that's one of the things that David probably picked up from his life experience. And he's asking us, I know this sounds impossible, because I think David understood his own weaknesses somewhat. And I think as we live here and now in Minnesota, we know our weaknesses. And we look at something like this, and this prescription of that we, you know, they all sounds good. Never tell lies, never speak evil, you know, keep from evil. But then all of a sudden we get in our cars and we walk out of here and we go, was my morning a fraud? And it wasn't. David knew how hard it is to walk this life. David knew how hard it is to fall and fail and get back up. And he comes back to us and he says, just try it. Just try it. Taste and see. Turn your eyes upon God. Just try it. In verse 4, David says that he is delivered from all his fears. We won't necessarily have to slide back to it. But it says in verse 4, he says, I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. And as I was studying this and going through this in dozens of commentaries and big books of other languages, usually I work with worship, and so their chord changes and not Hebrew, is looking at this going, it's interesting how David says he was delivered from all his fears, and yet he calls us to fear the Lord. Think, now we're going back to military talk here a little bit. If you want to throw your enemy off, give him multiple targets. You surround them. And what David has said is that God removed all my other fears, and he's asking me to fear one thing. See, the enemy is very good at distracting us. I get distracted by trying to please people, trying to make sure that I'm making enough money. All these things are good things. Trying to make sure that I'm trying to stay healthy. And there's these things that just surround us and occupy our time. And then you're trying to get kids off the soccer practice, play practice. And you're trying to make sure you're connecting with friends. And you're trying not to let anybody else down. And God says, one. Because the enemy is good at giving us all these other distractions. He says, focus on me. And David says that, taste and see. Just try me. Just try me. Focus on God. God knows that your kids are important. God knows that your relationship is important. God knows that your church is important. Your neighbors are important. He's not asking you to drop all the balls that you're juggling. But he's saying, focus on me, and I'll give you the strength and energy to do all that. And I think that's another thing that I thought was really unique from this. Fear won. Nothing else matters besides us coming to God and fearing him. So in our response to David's life, he didn't take these rules and he didn't apply seven easy steps and become wealthy. He did eventually become king, but even in his reign as king, he had more headaches than I think any of us in this room would ever want to put up with. So taking these steps does not guarantee an easy life. But he was known, when all was said and done, as a man after God's own heart. So that he knew that when he failed, when he took his own plan and it didn't quite work out, he humbled himself before God and said, I'm sorry. I fear you, Lord, above all else. And I honor you above all else. We live in a fallen world where stuff still happens to us. God can step in and he can change our circumstances, or he can step in and change us in spite of our circumstances. But this comes to a place for us to have a heart like David to say, yes, God, I want to taste this. I want to taste the life where I can continually come back to God after my failures. I don't want to live in shame anymore. I don't want to live with guilt anymore. I don't want to live ignoring that either. I want it to be a strength in my life. And maybe you, as we talked about earlier, may have taken one of those risks and it hasn't quite turned out as you planned. And now you find yourself feeling guilty about that or ashamed of that, or even, maybe if it's not even those emotions, maybe you're just hurt. And maybe it's even affected your view of the church. I say the same thing as David. Taste and see. Try God. It's not easy. It's going to be the hardest thing you do. I want to close and invite the worship team back up, because I want to close just as David opened, by offering our praise to God, that we would take our eyes off of our situation, my life, your life, and we would turn it to God. This is something that David modeled. When life got hard, his praise got on. So as his life got difficult, we worship. We don't sing ourselves out of trouble, but we turn our focus to him to recognize, where's our help come from? Where's our source come from? And I actually asked them to sing that song they sang earlier this morning, for who you are. Before they do, if you've had maybe a difficult time, or you've something that's been said this morning that resonates, and you go, I don't want to have that shame on my face anymore. I don't want that guilt anymore. We have people that would love to pray with you after the service up here. We would love to turn both my face and your face as we look to God and allow him to start working in our life. And maybe you're here today going, I'd like to try this. I'd like to taste and see. And so I encourage you as well, after worship, allow God to speak to you. And if after worship you feel that you'd like someone to pray with you, we'd love to pray with you as well. So will you do with me and turn our eyes to God and taste and see as we worship him? Please stand with us for closing worship.